What's up, Open Floor Globe? This is Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer Rohan Nadkarni. Rohan, how was your weekend?
Can't complain, Mike. It was pretty good. Rolling into a solid Monday here. You know, Miami's turning into the football capital of the world. We got Mario Cristobal coming down to the U. We have the hottest team in the league, the Miami Dolphins, with the hottest quarterback in the league, Tua Tagovailoa. So, you know, I might have to pivot. I don't know how many more of these basketball pods I got in me with, you know, the football hotbed that South Florida is turning into.
Yes, all of what you're saying is wonderful. The New England Patriots are in first place. Okay, so on today's show, we're going to open up the mailbag to answer a whole bunch of questions about a whole bunch of really interesting topics. But first, a quick reminder to keep those emails coming, openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Rohan, let's kick things off with an email from Jared.
Did you hear the rumor that people who email into the email address you mentioned are getting extra presents this holiday season? Because I heard a rumor that, like, a lot of people have been emailing in, have been getting extra presents, good fortune, etc. Good things have been happening in their lives. It's just interesting. It's interesting what you hear, you know?
The supply chain does not affect you if you email into Open Floor. Breaking news, everybody.
Yeah, the loophole. The loophole in the supply chain, yeah.
That's the secret. That's the secret. The cheat code. Okay, so let's kick things off with an email from Jared. And this is an email that you, Rohan, have been begging to answer for weeks, so your answer better be tremendous. Jared writes, "When Jrue Holiday was on the trading block, I felt like he was a player that could have helped almost any team win the championship. He can fit anywhere. Example, if he had joined the Mavs, Nuggets, Jazz, Hawks, or Sixers last season, they all might have won the title. Who is this year's Jrue Holiday?" Fascinating question from Jared. I have a guy who I want to talk about, but I know that you do as well, Rohan, so I'll let you kick this off.
Well, I have a couple people, Mike. Let me start here. This is someone who I've mentioned many, many, many times on this podcast, and maybe even used this exact introduction for him before. But, Mike, what if I told you there was a player out there with championship experience, averaging 19 points and 7 rebounds a game, shooting nearly 40% from 3 for almost the 4th or 5th season in a row now? Is that the type of player you may be interested in?
My ears would perk up.
What if I told you this player was also lengthy, could defend multiple positions, could succeed on or off the ball? Does that sound like someone who might fit in on a contender?
Is he a good locker room guy?
I think he's a pretty well-liked locker room guy. I think that his contract is expiring pretty soon. It's not a long-term commitment. So you have the option to run it back with him because he's a fairly young player. Some would say he's in the prime of his career. Or, you know, you go all in for just a short period of time.
I think that this is a player that most teams would be interested in. Who is it, Rohan?
Well, that player is Harrison Barnes of the Sacramento Kings, a longtime favorite of the Open Floor podcast. I'm just curious when people are going to start really trying to turn the screws on the Kings here. Obviously, they've made a coaching change. Whatever their internal expectations are, who knows? They seem to be higher than the external expectations for them, but it's Barnes and then also Buddy Hield. Those are the two guys that I think contenders need to be targeting. Buddy Hield was obviously mentioned a lot of trade rumors over the summer. A lot of people thought the Lakers were going to get him. They went for Russell Westbrook instead. We see how that has turned out. I don't think either of these guys are as good as Jrue Holiday or as big of difference makers as Jrue Holiday, obviously. He's someone who I believe we had in our top 30 in the top 100. I mean, Jrue Holiday is a great player. But what I think we're seeing this season is there's just a little bit less concentration of power at the top this season. Now, granted, the Nets have been coming on strong. Milwaukee's looked incredible when their top three guys are healthy. It's not that there aren't favorites in the league, but I don't think you need a player as great as Jrue Holiday to significantly impact your title odds this season. Now, could you imagine if the Nuggets, I don't think that it's possible for them, but if they somehow had Harrison Barnes right now, obviously with MPJ out, I think that even the Mavs, if he goes back to Dallas, could use him. If the Clippers somehow swung a trade for him, you mentioned the Jazz as a team needing to make a move. I know he's not quite the perimeter stopper you think they need, but I think he does improve them a little bit on the wing, gives them some more lineup flexibility. I think he's exactly the kind of guy every contender could use in the playoffs. Because, as I mentioned, I mean, he's going to shoot threes. I mean, he could anchor some kind of second unit groups if you take your number one star out. Let him get you some offense in those few minutes when your star is resting in the playoffs. He can play off the ball. He's hitting threes. I know a lot of people's last memory of him is missing some threes in the 2016 finals. He's improved as a lot as a shooter since then.
Wait, that's their last memory? Are these people been in a coma?
How many people were watching the Harrison Barnes-led Mavericks? Or how many people are watching the current Sacramento Kings? So I think that he can help a lot of teams.
I mean, I 100% agree. I have a Harrison Barnes stat for you. There are five players in the NBA who are averaging more free throws per game than Harrison Barnes. Giannis, Jimmy Butler, DeMar DeRozan, James Harden, and Kevin Durant.
Wow.
So in addition to everything that you cited, his ability to get to the line this year at a career high rate is just humongous. Yeah, I mean, you laid out the case pretty wonderfully. He's shooting threes well. He added the step back earlier this season. He hasn't really been taking too many of those lately. I wonder sometimes about the drag of being in a situation like the one he's in Sacramento, what that has on performance, even though he's a tip-top professional, and I'm not saying that it's negatively impacting him. But, you know, the players around him, the lineups that he's in, players like him are only better when surrounded by better players. So you throw him on, you put him next to Jokic. I think that would be a terrific fit. You put him, the player who I would love to see traded, who I'm going to pivot to right now, is Jeremy Grant. Very similar to Harrison Barnes in a lot of ways. A little bit more of an independent shot creator. He's also getting the line quite a bit. He ranks 10th in the NBA in free throw attempts per game. Tied with Bam Adebayo, actually. And we did a roundtable last week where we talked about trades that we want Western contenders to make. And I want the Jets to either acquire Harrison Barnes or Jeremy Grant. I just think that that would vault them into a different level of just like a higher tier of versatility and adaptability and just make them that much more dangerous in a postseason setting. And less predictable, too. And, Jeremy Grant just fits, along with Harrison Barnes, I think they're very similar players. They just fit everywhere. You could slide them into almost any rotation, in any role. Jeremy Grant was that guy who was acquired by the Denver Nuggets a couple seasons ago.
And he played great for them.
And he played really well. He was pretty solid in that series, or throughout the playoff run in the bubble, but even in that series against the Lakers that they eventually lost, that they easily could have won. I think people forget how competitive that series was. Anthony Davis had a buzzer beater to win one of the games. But Jeremy Grant was really solid there. He's not hitting the three ball very accurately this season. But again, you look at the players who are around him and the shots that he's taking, and it's just like I don't think that that's really a true sign of his. I don't think he's this inefficient, is what I'm trying to say. He's just a really perfect player for today's league as a supporting member. I think he's acquitted himself fine enough in terms of the numbers that he's accrued as the first option in Detroit. But right now, with Cade Cunningham being kind of like the primary ball handler and Killian Hayes kind of coming on when healthy as a really intriguing player who I think they should give some time and some opportunity to. Like, Jeremy Grant just doesn't really fit there anymore. So let's get Jeremy Grant on a very good team and have him elevate that team to being a potential champion.
That's a great point. I think that's a great pick. And I think something we're both kind of hinting at is, if you think about Aaron Gordon, who was in a similar position to Jeremy Grant when he was on the Magic, right? At least Jeremy Grant last season, where they're asking him to be the number one option. It's not really working. You see flashes of it. But as soon as he gets to Denver, he becomes a totally different player and way more useful because he's in the right role for himself. Instead of asking him to kind of bat one spot higher in the order, you're asking him to bat one spot lower. and his whole life changes from there. And I think if you get guys like Harrison Barnes or Jeremy Grant, you ask them to do less, you actually get more out of those players because they're not worried about inefficiency or volume, etc. I also want to check in, Mike, on a take that I ran by you on a different show that mm-hmm. we do a couple weeks ago. I just want to make sure. I told you the Warriors were the most dangerous team in the West about a month yes. ago now. You told me the Jazz were more dangerous. I just want to double back to that, get a temperature check on you. How you feel about that? Are you willing to jump off the boat of your take now, or do you want to go down with the ship?
I feel tremendous. 1-point victory in Cleveland on Sunday. Let's go. Rudy Gay at the 5 in that game. Just a lot of intriguing stuff going down in Utah. So, no, I'm still loving the Utah Jazz. And I will admit that I would love to see them make a move before the trade deadline. That would be very helpful. Jordan Clarkson, I don't recall seeing him make a 3 this season. So, there's some room for improvement there. But no, I mean, obviously the Warriors have been red hot, and you were not wrong in what you said. But, you know, sometimes both people can be right, Rohan. That's okay.
Oh, okay. Interesting. It's a long season. It's a long season.
Exactly. So let's go to this email from Thaddeus, who writes, I've had a question I think is fun that I've been mulling over. Who is the worst player who could lead a contender in scoring? This doesn't mean he's their best player, and I'll say my bar for contender is that you guys think they would avoid the play-in. So Thaddeus mentions...
definition of contender.
Yeah, very loose. My definition of contender is a team I think can win the championship.
Agreed, yeah. That's
what but Thaddeus mentions, and granted, to Thaddeus' credit, there are a lot of teams like that this season. I mean, maybe any team in the top 6 can win the title, I don't know. But Thaddeus mentions DeMar DeRozan as a likely candidate here, the leading scorer for the Chicago Bulls. Chicago Bulls have been playing tremendous basketball. And I guess we can just... like, why wouldn't we call them a contender? You know, like,
yeah, I think the Bulls are a contender.
It seems weird, but like, sure, just let's call them a contender.
They've played well against good teams. Yeah. I think we have to at this point admit the Bulls are a contender.
Yes, the Bulls are a contender. The Bulls are back.
Yeah.
So I think if we're looking at this season and these rosters, like, that's a fair enough thing to say about DeMar, even though I love him. This is like an extreme backhanded compliment.
I think we could do worse than DeMar.
So I was looking through all the teams, and DeMar, it was tough to come up with someone who is quote unquote worse than DeMar. But I found someone, another player who technically isn't leading his team in scoring right now, but could conceivably do so before the season is over. Mm-hmm. He plays for a contender. I believe, Rohan, that you told me at one point you were considering getting his face tattooed on your back. It is Tyler Hero. He has scored 45 more total points than Jimmy Butler this year, but he's averaging 2.4 fewer points per game. And it's conceivable that, would you disagree when I say, like, in 3 months, Tyler Hero could easily be the leading scorer on the Miami Heat, and they could still be a contender?
Yeah. No, that's a good pick. I was going to say Jason Tatum.
Oh, my God.
I'm kidding. this is a tricky one because it's like, it's not like worst team. It's like, who's the worst player? He's not going to lead the team in scoring, but does it have to be their own team, right? You know what I mean? Like, could Nikola Vucevic, could Vooch be the leading scorer on a quote-unquote team that was in the top 6 in either conference?
Well, he could, for sure, but contender, I don't see... like, Vooch right now, we just talked about the Bulls for like 2 seconds, and he's not their leading scorer.
I know, but I just took this question, I guess, like, a little bit more theoretical in terms of, like, all the players in the league, if they were the number one scoring option... could they finish in the top 6? So I'm ending up on guys like Vooch, Tobias Harris.
Maybe. Thaddeus actually threw out Kristaps Porzingis in his email also as another potential
I honestly don't.
Candidate here.
Yeah, I don't see that one.
Wait, so you're going Tobias Harris and Vooch, but no KP? KP's a bucket getter, man.
I'm out on KP. I know he's been better this year, but I'm out on KP. I'm sorry. Wow. Here's I think, the spiciest one I have.
Okay.
Could Mikal Bridges be the number one scorer on a team that was top six in either conference?
That's absolutely ludicrous. I'm sorry.
No chance? I love Mikal Bridges.
There's a 0% chance there. I'm sorry. That's just not who he is in the NBA.
But he's like, He's got a little juice. I think he could run some pick and rolls. It was like the year, granted, this team finished out of the playoffs, so take it with a massive grain of salt. But there was that year the Heat just kind of like turned the offense over to Josh Richardson, and it had mixed results. And I think Mikal Bridges is a better player than him.
So if Mikal Bridges was the leading scorer on a team, as opposed to he's like the fourth, maybe the fifth option right now on the Suns, and his buckets are almost entirely created by the attention that
I'm not that disagreeing. Devin Booker and I'm Chris not Ball. Disagreeing. I'm just saying it's. I said it was a spicy one. I didn't say it was a bland one.
It's pretty spicy. What about Pascal Siakam?
I think he is like too qualified for this discussion.
So you think? That's interesting. And we have an email that we're going to get to at some point.
Was he not the leading scorer on the 2020 Raptors?
On the 2020 Raptors,
the bubble season,
I believe he would have been their leading scorer.
He's like overqualified for this discussion. That team was so close to making the conference finals.
I know, and then they got dominated by the Celtics in Game 7. So
I wouldn't go that far.
Sorry, just humiliated. Really?
Yikes.
Interesting enough, OG Anunoby is actually Toronto's leading scorer this season, not Pascal, who is third behind
Pascal
Fred VanVleet
and OG Anunoby. Pascal has not played that too much. So VanVleet's another interesting answer to this question.
He is, and I mean, the fact that, I don't think that if he were a leading scorer on a team, I just don't think that that team would be very good, and we're kind of seeing that right now with Toronto. Toronto is not very good, and he is, I think Fred VanVleet is probably their best player this season, if not obviously their best player. So it's a really interesting question, and you can get very theoretical with it, as you were saying. Let's go to this question, though, this email from Christine. And this is not theoretical. This is just explicit, and I love this question.
Okay, all right.
Christine writes...
Parental advisory recommended, I guess.
Yes. Earmuffs. Steph Curry has obviously been balling again this season, but how many of these awards do you see him getting?
This was a MVP, good question.
MVP, All-Star, All-Star MVP, Scoring Champion, Finals MVP. I'm setting the over-under at 2.5 for these five...
That's a good question.
...quote awards. So... Okay, Rohan, so I know where I'm going here, but I want to throw it to you first to kind of pick your brain, because this is a fascinating one.
List them all out again for me. It's MVP, Finals MVP.
MVP, Finals MVP, Scoring Champion, All-Star MVP, and then him just making the All-Star team, which is definitely going to be one of them.
This was a really good question. And she set the over-under beautifully, because there's two that I'm confident in.
There's two. Okay, so All-Stars, I thought of even erasing it from the exercise.
Yeah. We should have put, but All-NBA was also a... All-Stars a shoe-in. I think he's going to win the scoring title.
Okay. So that's two.
The problem with All-Star Game MVP is that it's like, it could be anyone. It's not going to go to didn't Paul George win it that one year? Like, it could just go to anyone who has a hot night on the night when no one cares.
Sure. I guess you got to ask yourself, who should care? Because that's usually who kind of wins. Like, I remember when Westbrook won.
I think Steph's too old to care.
Okay. Interesting.
Really,
so we're giving All-Stars, we know All-Stars in there. I'm trying to see right now if he's ever been, I don't think he's ever been an All-Star MVP, Steph, in his career. He's not been a Finals MVP in his career. He has been a scoring champion twice in his career. And right now, I believe he's third in scoring behind KD and Giannis, if I'm not mistaken. So that's on the table as well.
Yeah.
And then there's MVP. So, okay, let's talk about MVP for a second. MVP is
the most interesting one on this thing, because that's been a great race already. And Giannis is making a push now.
I think Giannis is going to win MVP.
I don't think he's going to win.
Okay.
I think he's maybe already missed too much time.
What are you talking about?
Let me take that back. He hasn't missed too much time. I think the Bucks' slow start has already maybe knocked him out.
My counter to that is that the Bucks' slow start is proof and indicative of his value to the team.
Yes, but that's just never how these votes go. It just never is. If they cannot finish 7 games behind Golden State, and he's going to win. I don't think that's going to happen.
So when Giannis won MVP, the on-off point differential, the net on-off point differential, his first year was 8.8 points per 100 possessions. And basically, this is just the difference between when he's on versus when he's off, and you just add those two figures together, and you get the second year it was 12.7. These are like massive numbers, very impressive numbers.
With Jokic was at like 39.4 at one point this year. Which was really insane. High this year. Yeah.
Right now for Giannis, 8.8 first MVP, 12.7 second MVP. Right now it's 23.7. And when he's on the floor, they're plus 13.6, which is just, I don't even know what to say about it. And the thing that separates, real quick, about Giannis, the thing that always separates him in these conversations where you're like, okay, so offensively, we're kind of splitting hairs here in terms of his impact and his efficiency, and we're splitting hairs between him and Steph and KD and blah, blah, blah. And then you're just like, okay, defense, what's going on there? And it's just like, okay, well, this guy is maybe the second or third or first best defender in the world. So
tell me his on-off differential one more time.
23.7 points per 100 possessions.
He's beating Steph, who's at 16.8. According to Cleaning the Glass. I'm not saying he doesn't have a case. I just think that it's not... As we all know, it doesn't just come down to who has the best case. Like, it's always a weird mix of case, numbers, narrative, etc. Mm-hmm. And team record is also a factor. And I just think that if the Warriors are, like, the number one seed and were the number one seed the entire season, I think Steph's going to win. So I'm going to go over. I'm going to go over for the question.
Okay, so which ones are you? You're saying All-Star, you're saying scoring champion, and you're saying MVP are the three that put you over the top?
Yes.
Okay, so I think I'm also going over. I think, man, this is so hard.
Last week we had
Christine, you're an evil genius.
This is a kind of like parlor game you would play with your friends, and this is perfect. Like, this is absolutely perfect. We got the question last week about the 5-man defensive lineups. This is another absolute fastball. I love this question. It's so good. But I'm gonna confirm, lock in, over.
Okay, so I think All-Star MVP, I can always see Steph winning because if he wants to win, like, it's always on the table for him because no one's going to guard him. And he's just, remember last year when him and Dame were just shooting those logo threes and it was like the most thrilling thing you've ever seen.
And then there's NBA writers complaining, like, no one's trying hard enough in this game. I can't believe I'm watching it.
Yes, I agree. Those people stink. So I can see him winning that. I can frankly see, like, look, scoring champion, he's not in first right now, and Clay's going to come back. So how would that, how will that impact things in that category?
It will impact, but I mean, it's not like he hasn't dominated before with Clay in the lineup. Like, what if that makes him score even more? Like, that could cut either way.
It's no, that very fair. Yeah. Very, very fair. I think finals MVP is the one we haven't really talked about. Yeah. And that's like,
if they win the finals, he's going to win MVP this time.
No, I think like if they get, if they win the final, I will say, if they win the finals, I think it'll be very difficult, almost regardless of how he plays.
Exactly. Yes. He will win MVP if they win the finals. No question.
It's just 11. It's 11 media members, I believe. Yeah. Look, like, even if his numbers aren't there, we all know now, 6-7 years into this, that when he's on the floor, the attention that he draws just enables everything that happens.
Was Iguodala the worst finals MVP they've given out in, I don't know, modern NBA history? Not that I don't love Andre.
So when you say worst, do you mean,
like, most egregious? Like, not worst player, like most egregious.
Most egregious. Okay. Very interesting question. Okay, so I have a few. I'm just going to go off the top of my head here because I have a few. 2010, Pau Gasol was the finals MVP over Kobe Bryant. Anyone who watches that series, I'm sorry. That's just, it's just a fact. 2007.
Okay.
2007, Tim Duncan. Tony Parker won, and Tim Duncan was on the team, and he was like probably the best player in the world. It's just like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Those are two off the top of my head.
Some people would say Anthony Davis over LeBron in 2020. I think I do. I'm now coming back to LeBron. Should have won it.
Wait a minute. Didn't LeBron... LeBron won.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're right. What am I saying? What am I saying? No, no. But I think some people think LeBron should have lost to Anthony Davis.
Yes, that is correct. Anthony Davis was the best player on the team, and he should have been the finals MVP.
But I don't think so. I think I came back around to LeBron on that one. Yeah.
Okay. That's fair enough. LeBron is awesome. I'm trying to think, are there any others? But I mean, that are
it,
really,
like, Steph should have won it, and then second place should have been LeBron. It should have been Steph and LeBron in the 2015 finals.
Steph? Okay, that's interesting. I mean, I think I'll go LeBron in that one personally. I just think what he did.
Yes, I agree. I
with
want
everybody
him to
out.
Win.
Yes, I think that if a player should ever win Finals MVP. Jerry West won it once, I believe. Mm-hmm. If it should ever happen again, it should have happened to LeBron that year. Absolutely.
Do you think LeBron would accept one less ring if he had won that finals MVP? Because that's kind of a cooler feather in your cap, isn't it? Kind of a nice, subtle jab at Steph to have that one over him if he had won that award that year.
It is, yes, that would be amazing, and I don't know if he would sacrifice the ring for it, but it would have been,
well, not the 2016 one, but he would have maybe sacrificed the 2021. I want to look up, should we maybe shame the voters who voted for Iguodala that year? I'm sure we can find out.
We should we should not do that. And I mean, Iguodala's case was, and this is why Iguodala should not have won, in my opinion, his case was entirely predicated on he guarded LeBron and like LeBron went off. Yeah. So I know LeBron wasn't efficient, but like, Matthew Dellavedova was the second best player.
Right. I don't even think LeBron was trying to be efficient as much as he was trying to pound the shit out of the basketball and like shoot at the end of the shot clock every time. They're like, it's in God's hands now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So this is just this is what great questions do to
they
this
send you,
podcast.
Okay. Okay, but I'm going to... I have the... So, here's the crazy part, is... Steph didn't get a single vote for Finals MVP.
Really?
Yeah, it was Iguodala 7, LeBron James 4. I'm just going to read out who voted who, okay? We don't have to...
We don't need to slander anybody. No, we're not going to slander anybody on the show. I'm sorry. We can't do that.
Okay, but can we shout out the people who voted LeBron? Can we do that?
Sure.
Shout out to these people. Steve Ashburner, NBA.com, LeBron James. Jeff Van Gundy, LeBron James. Zach Lowe, LeBron James. And how about our good buddy, Howard Beck, then of Bleacher Report, LeBron James? On the right side of history, okay. All of you. Good call. Okay.
I love that. That's wonderful. I wish LeBron won that finals MVP.
Steph didn't even get a single vote. That was clearly, without shaming people, I think people, that shows how much the conversation around the sport has changed in the last 5 years, 6 years, because that wouldn't happen again today. Because the fact that none of the voters voted Steph, I think, was like showed how little grasp there was kind of broadly yet about analytics and his impact, because it's insane that he didn't get a single vote.
Do you think if that exact finalist played today, you know, what you just said about things kind of changing a little bit, do you think LeBron would have won?
I think Steph would have won, and I think the vote would have been tighter. It would have been like Steph 6-5.
I feel like we could just have a finals MVP. We'll save this for the offseason. Because now I'm down like a rabbit hole right now looking at all of the finals MVPs.
Just talking about the finals in general, oh my God. And like, those series are crazy. I also want to make a request of our producer, Shelby. I feel like we should start keeping track of some of the predictions we make on this show just to revisit at the end of the year and have some fun with it. Like, we
unnecessary.
No, I don't think we, not to roast each other, but just to see how we did. Like, we should put a pin in the Steph over under one and then see where we ended up at the end of the year. We should just do a year in review after the season ends.
No, I like that a lot. And that kind of, honestly, I can tie that into our next question. It's an email from Abdul.
Before we get into the next question, can I throw one more thing at you?
Sure.
Right now, which two teams do you want to see in the finals?
Which two teams do I want to see in the finals?
Yeah.
Thunder and Celtics? No, I'm just kidding. Which team do I want to see in the finals? I would say I want to see Kawhi Leonard come back, and I want the Clippers to look right. I want the Clippers to make the finals in the West, and I think that would be a lot of fun, and the Western Conference playoffs would be totally bonkers if he came back and looked right. If not him, you know, I do have a soft spot for the Utah Jazz. I would love to see them break through. And maybe it doesn't necessarily have to be.
Can you pick a finals final appearance? Series, Mike? Can you pick a final series, Mike? Just two teams. You listed four teams already. Just give me two teams.
Clippers and Hawks. Let's go Clippers and Hawks. That's the finals I want right now, today on December 6th.
Okay. Terrible pick.
Do you have an answer to that question?
Yeah,
do you have
man.
An answer?
Yeah, man. Warriors-Bucks.
Okay. Warriors-Bucks. Okay, that would be cool, I guess.
I want to see the old dynasty try to knock off one that's emerging. I want to see teams like headlined by two stars on like opposite poles of the star spectrum, where you have Steph and Giannis who play completely different games. It would just be incredible. It would be incredible.
It would be great. I agree. Okay, so Abdul has been sitting on his hands, patiently waiting for me to read his email. Abdul writes, "Hey guys, longtime listener here. Open Floor was actually the first podcast I ever listened to back in 2015. Seeing it thrive through the years and grow just as I've grown has been awesome. Let's talk about the real most improved player who won't get any national attention because of counting stats, I guess. It's John Collins. I understand that national people don't watch the Hawks, and the national people who do watch the Hawks only do it to see how many free throws Trey gets. But someone has to know this. John Collins is the story of this Hawks season. He's so unbelievably good. I walked out of a game last week where he only had 11 points and Trey had 30, but Collins was by far the best player on the floor from buzzer to buzzer. He got a bag this summer, and instead of slacking off, he came back and is having the best season of his career. He's a menace on the defensive end, a 99th percentile finisher in the pick and roll, got a legitimate three ball, and now, after getting his $125 million contract, he's added playmaking skills that rank him as an 89th percentile playmaker as a big man per B-ball index. Abdul, bravo to you for the advanced stats in this email. Very, very impressed here. Abdul continues, this guy hustles, does all the dirty work, and is the vocal and emotional leader of the Hawks. He should be an all-star this year, and he truly should be getting some or any love for most improved player. To go from the 19th pick, whose only talent was jumping and dunking, to one of the most well-rounded two-way big men in today's game is an incredible achievement. So, my question here off of this email, which was very wonderfully researched and impressive by Abdul, is, and I want to say real quick, I think this ties back to what you were saying earlier, Rohan, about going back to our preseason predictions. And one of the interesting ones that I was looking at when we did our roundtable for SI.com was most improved player, because I want to say who actually leapt forward and who didn't. So we'll get into that in a second. But just let's quickly just answer Abdul's point-blank question here. Is John Collins the most improved player in the league right now for you, Rohan?
Well, first of all, Abdul, love the passion. Thank you for taking shots at the national guys like Mike and I. We need people keeping us humble. I don't think he's the most improved player, but that's not because I don't think he's been great. I've always been high on John Collins. It was insane to me that there was like a stretch at the beginning of last season. People were like, is Atlanta going to trade this guy? They might not re-sign him long-term, etc. That never really made sense to me. I thought we saw maybe not as consistent. I mean, obviously, it's different over the regular season, but I thought we saw the idealized version of John Collins during the playoffs. And I don't know that he's been so much better than that guy. So I guess what I'm saying is I had such a high floor, high opinion of John Collins that I'm not looking at him as a guy who's taken a leap. I'm looking at it as if this is an extension of the guy we saw in the postseason just kind of continuing to thrive, continue to be at that level. I mean, I really liked him. He's such a unique player in that he works so well as a power forward, you know, quote unquote, if you want to use that term. So great playing the four because he can space the floor alongside a big like Clint Capella, or he can play the five, you know, work out of the short role if people trap Trey. He can be a vertical threat. He can be a spacing threat. Versatile defender. I thought we saw all of that in the postseason. So I don't think, I hope I'm not sleeping on John Collins. I don't want to take away from the strides that he's made, but I've seen this as more of like a extension than kind of that classic leap season, where I don't want to sound like a homer, but can you really say, if you want to chart, you know, improvement season to season, it's hard to argue that like there have been players more improved than say Tyler Hero or Miles Bridges, who've kind of taken these really big leaps in multiple areas of their game, whereas I think John Collins like found this success in the postseason and is like building off of that.
Right. I think John Collins is awesome. He's one of my favorite players to watch. He dunked so hard on Cody Martin last night that Caleb Martin started to shiver. He's fourth in, so 538 has this catch-all Raptor stat, and their Raptor wins above replacement metric has him fourth right now. And the three players above him are Giannis, Steph, and Jokic. So obviously he's doing something right in the eyes of people who are watching the Hawks play. The on-off numbers are ridiculous. He's hitting 48% of his above-the-break threes. He's doing all the stuff that, Abdul, you mentioned, Rohan, that you mentioned, all the little stuff. But in terms of like the whole league and who's the most improved, I can't say that John Collins is in that tier, really.
Which is a testament to how good he's been in his career.
He's just a really good player. I think the more fascinating way to look at this and frame this is John Collins an all-star?
Yes, that is the question.
That's what we're going to have to talk about as we get closer to February or closer to when all-star teams are announced. And I think there will be a case. Mm-hmm. And before the season, I remember I think I told this story on the pod before, but when I was down in Atlanta doing my story for SI, I asked, you know, almost everybody that I talked to or everybody that I talked to, is there a second all-star on this team? And, you know, behind Trey, who is the second all-star? And everyone was just like,
Kevin Huerter.
Everybody was like, hey, like, you know, we just have like a bunch of potential candidates, and you know, DeAndre Hunter looks good, Cam Reddish looks good, Clint Capella's great, John Collins is awesome. No one would pin down exactly one player, and when I asked John Collins the question, he just said, it's got to be me. And I was like, you are you're an absolute icon, I love you.
There was a great,
so he's great.
Yeah, he's great. I just want to shout out, because it's funny that we're talking about John Collins. I think I saw this morning or last night with Sam Esfandiari, who hosts the Light Years podcast, the Warriors podcast, tweeted this play out. But it was just a great play of the Hawks running a high pick and roll. Capella's on the floor. Collins is in the corner. And he just makes a great cut to the rim, gets a dunk. And you talk about little things. I mean, that's the thing, that the cut. It might show up in an advanced stat, doesn't show up in the box score, doesn't show up in terms of how much pressure he puts on a defense, etc. Guys like that are so valuable, especially come playoff time. We saw it with Ayton, these players who can kind of put pressure on defenses in multiple ways and kind of leverage the defense's attention even when they don't have the ball are so valuable. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about John Collins is, whether he has the ball or doesn't, he demands their attention. That helps all their shooters and all their perimeter players.
Right. So I guess going back again to our preseason predictions, who did you have for most improved player? Do you remember?
I have no idea. I was kind of, I thought you'd have it on you considering you went back and looked at it. No clue.
Okay, why don't you, can you do me a favor and look it up while I tell you about...
So you looked it up, you looked up the SI.com article and you said, let me not even check who Rohan had?
No, well, I'm sure I glanced and I looked at it, but this was like Saturday night at like, or like early Sunday morning at like 2 a.m. when I was doing this, so... and I had just watched the Spurs Warriors game. And I was like, did I have DeJounte Murray as my most improved player pick? I think I did. I hope I did, because I think DeJounte Murray is going to win this award. We don't need to talk about that, okay?
That's I picked Jokic, which was a brilliant stroke of genius.
Okay, so getting back to most improved player. I had DeJounte Murray. I think DeJounte Murray is the most improved player in the league. And I think that this award is so funny just because, you know, we debated all the time, like, how much should context matter? How much should experience and age matter? You know, the Spurs lost DeMar DeRozan. We're seeing now how impactful DeMar DeRozan is on an offense. And I knew coming into the season that DeJounte would be their primary ball handler. And he's, in some ways, like, he hasn't really improved his efficiency. But a lot of the numbers are up in a big way, without turnovers going up, by the way, which is really impressive. And, I mean, he's averaging, like, 19.99. Like, it's just, like, that's just something that you don't see, giving all defensive-level defense. So he's my pick. He was my pick then. He's my pick now. Miles Bridges, you mentioned, has looked great, even though his three-point shooting's fallen off a little bit. He's probably the clubhouse favorite to win this award, I would say. And I wanted to shout out one other player. And I hate rewarding first to second year leaps because I don't think that they, like, you're supposed to improve. That's just like what it is. So I don't like doing that. But Tyrese Maxey is making the type of leap that's just like, what is even happening? So he's the rare case. And a few years ago, Devontae Graham was in this category for me where it was just like, what is even going on?
Yeah.
Right, so Tyrese Maxey is another guy who I want to just quickly shout out. There's a lot of candidates. I just don't think that John Collins quite cuts into that top tier.
Can I tell you who I picked? Because it's pretty embarrassing.
Please
do. It's not embarrassing. I'm glad I picked this player, and I still have high hopes
for
them.
Wait, can I guess? I promise I have not looked it up. Can I guess?
Yeah.
Was it Jordan Poole?
No, which would have been a sick pick. I'll give you two more guesses.
Who was it? I have no other guesses for you.
I picked Jaren Jackson Jr., which I think is an inspired pick.
Doug, he's looked great recently since Ja Morant went down.
He has. He's not going to have the counting stats for it. Like, he's not even averaging a career high in points, technically. But I really like Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, you know, if they'd kept up their team success and he really balls out as long as Ja Morant's out, maybe he can sneak into the conversation. I don't know that Memphis outside of Ja is ever going to get the national attention. He needs to win the award, but I love JJJ, man. And I'm glad he's at least been healthy enough to play this year.
Trip. Yeah, he's fantastic. He's looked really good. Memphis is like the most dominant team in NBA history since Ja Morant went down, which is pretty interesting.
Mike, do you watch do you like watching Inside the NBA, like after the TNT games?
I genuinely do. Yes. Actually, well, you know what? Let me say it kind of sometimes depends on what else is going on. Mm-hmm. Like what the game was, how close the game was. Mm-hmm. I guess I'll say I still love hearing that crew's opinions on things that are like big newsworthy items. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense. So I do absolutely watch it still, yeah. Yes.
No, I love the show. I absolutely love it. I love staying up late and watching it. For some reason, this just popped into my mind, but were you watching the other night when they were giving out, they were doing EJ's Neato Stat of the Night, the best segment on television, and like worth staying up till 1:15 on the East Coast for, and they were doing like, they were handing out, like, scarves from the Harry Potter houses, and, like, as usual, Shaq ruined the segment by, like, taking all the scarves for himself. But they said, EJ's like, all right, this next house is Hufflepuff, and Barkley's like, Kenny, we know that's you. people on the set are laughing. You can hear people behind the camera laughing. God, that show's incredible. That's just a good show, man. It's so good.
Is this leading anywhere?
Or no, did you just nothing. I don't know why it popped into my head, but Inside the NBA, man. It's people. My big issue is like people want it to fit their worldview. Like they want it to be this like advanced stats, like great, like understand 3-point shooting. But once you accept that it's like a television show with running plot lines and running jokes, and it's like a years-long soap opera, it becomes a much better watch.
It's no coincidence that it's won like an Emmy every single year. Yeah. It's the best studio show in the history of North American professional sports.
Agreed.
Okay, so I'm going to pivot. The only way I could follow that up, honestly, is with this week's segment of the Rip City Royston Report.
And when did it become the Rip City Royston Report? I thought it was just the Rip City Report.
No, Shelby Royston, our producer, loves alliteration, and he wanted to throw in Royston, and so that's going to be the new name forward. And honestly, this week's segment is, we're not even like trying to force this year, because the Portland Trailblazers are in the news. And so Shelby, are you with us right now? Okay, perfect. So I wanted to touch on a recent article published in The Athletic that reported that Damian Lillard is interested in playing with Ben Simmons. Shelby, give us your thoughts on this report, this news, and just what's going on in Portland land.
I mean, I, of course, know he was interested, but now that he's saying it publicly, that's pretty big. I mean, he's kind of obviously not happy with how things are going this season. He's play has been down, but you know, he's obviously wanting another playmaker in there. I guess we mm-hmm.
say. Are but, you a big are you a Ben Simmons guy, Shelby?
Would you rather have Lou Dort?
I would rather have Lou Dort, but you know, we can't have everything. But you know, they already have shooters in like Lillard, obviously, Powell, I guess, Simons, if he wasn't included in the trade, so that's like mm-hmm. the problem with that Philly had last season. Like, they don't have, mm-hmm. they didn't have as many, and then you don't have Simmons even attempting a shot from, like, less than 5 feet, so, like, what do you, but, like, it would probably fit in with Portland.
And then the other thing is, you would assume that CJ McCollum is going to have to go to Philadelphia or wherever if they were to acquire Ben Simmons. What is your fan from like your fandom? What is your fandom relationship with CJ McCollum? Do you like CJ? Would it be sad for you if he left?
I mean, I worry about that. I mean, it was headlines everywhere that he purchase the winery during the off season.
Yes.
Oregon is sort of its own wine country. Now he's going to be living in, I'm guessing, New Jersey, maybe the Northern Liberties if he wanted to live in the city. He's going to be away from this thing. I mean, I wouldn't want to run a business like that from across the country. He may block. I don't know. He may enact some type of no trade clause.
He needs to be there crushing those grapes.
Okay.
So he may enact some kind of. Okay.
That was
like he might, like, you know, they've been spy movies, they pour the ink and like it's invisible ink. Yeah, I think he might have done that with his contract. Like, pour the wine on there and it reveals I'm not going anywhere.
I cannot breathe.
Okay.
Okay. What an incredible loophole that you could include in a contract. We put invisible ink on the back. Oh, boy.
The Rip City Royston Report just keeps getting better and better. It's why people are subscribing en masse to Open Floor. There was
another loophole in the Rip City Report.
What was that?
You guys curb your enthusiasm, fans.
Yes.
I've seen a few episodes in my day.
Did you see the second to latest episode?
I have not seen anything from this season.
Rogan, Michael?
I have not. I am actually trying to save them so that I can binge through at the same time. It's been difficult for me to have that type of patience, but I have not seen that episode yet.
No spoilers, but in one scene, Larry David goes to Vince Vaughn's house. He's playing Funkhauser's brother, I believe.
Right.
Funkhauser sits on the couch, turns on the TV, and playing in 2021 is like a 2015 regular season game in Portland against the Clippers. Now, what channel on TV, even basketball related, is playing a regular season game from 2015? They were wearing sleeves. Still, that was like a sleeves, short sleeves.
Oh, that was the tell. That's how you knew.
And you see the court's different. Blake Griffin was on the court. I'm noticing immediately. They don't think you're going. They think I'm going to be locked in on this whole, like, this argument about Perrier and San Pellegrino that Vince and Larry are having, but I'm locked into the TV. I just want to know, you couldn't have gotten like some generic footage. What was the choice to pick a game from 7 years ago or so?
Truly fascinating question. We got to get to the bottom of this, frankly. It's now my life's work to figure out how this happened.
Mike and I do know that NBA TV co-byline. Yeah.
I mean, this should be a narrative podcast spinoff us, where we just try to figure out the answer to this question.
It's 1.5 episodes long. It was just one phone call to HBO, and we figured it out.
Yes, and then we were all fired.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's close today's show on the topic of Ben Simmons. We got a bunch of, for some reason, honestly, I don't know why, but this week we got a ton of emails about Ben Simmons and possible trade ideas, and we've obviously hit this topic very hard over the past few months, but I wanted to just, you know, let our emailers be heard. And so we're going to do just a quick thumbs up, thumbs down. I'm going to read a few trade ideas, abbreviated emails. And Rohan, I just want you to give me a quick thumbs up, thumbs down. Nothing crazy with your deep analysis. our first one comes from Kareem.
A little bit of an insult. Okay.
No. I'm congratulating you on your knowledge. Okay. Our first email comes from Kareem, who writes, "I'm a lifelong Knicks fan, and obviously I'm traumatized by our lack of consistency. So here's the question. Please tell me if I'm totally spiraling or onto something. A trade package that involves Kemba and RJ Barrett for Ben Simmons. Thoughts on that one?
No chance for you. No chance Philly does it. Zero.
No chance Philly. Is there any package, real quick, that you can think of involving the Knicks and Ben Simmons? Like, would a Julius Randle Ben Simmons swap? Is that? I don't think that makes sense.
I don't think there's any good fits on the Knicks roster for Philly.
Fair enough. Our next email comes in from Chris, who writes, "Hey, Chris, Michael, and I guess Rohan."
Yeah, I saw Chris this email. What the hell? What the hell, Chris? What's up, man?
Chris writes, "Chris clearly deserves a spot at the top for having such a cool name, so there he shall remain." I can't speak to why Chris does not like you, Rohan, but maybe Chris can email us back in.
Chris is not a cooler name than Rohan, but okay.
No comment. So, the fake trade. Sixers receive Marcus Smart, Jeremy Grant, and a third contract, perhaps Dennis Schroeder. The Pistons receive two first-round picks, some combination of Boston's non-Rob Williams young guys and Danny Green's contract. Boston receives Ben Simmons. Rohan, what do you think about this one? This is actually a pretty interesting
fake trade. The Celtics are sending out Rob Williams and who?
No. The Celtics are sending out... Keep up. Come on. What are you doing? The Celtics are sending out some combination of non-Rob Williams young guys, Marcus Smart, a third contract, perhaps Dennis Schroeder, and, you know, in this three-team configuration hypothetical, there are two first-round picks. I do not know where those are coming from, if they're coming from Philly or from Boston to Detroit. But I assume since Boston is receiving Ben Simmons that they would probably be giving up at least one of those first round picks. So what's your reaction here to this one?
No. Who are the Sixers getting? Peyton Pritchard? Like Romeo Langford?
The Sixers are receiving Marcus Smart, Jeremy Grant, and a third
contract.
This
is the first time you said Jeremy Grant's name in this trade.
That name did not come up
at any other point during this question.
I don't know. Are you online sports betting while we're recording this podcast?
I don't think that one. That one seems a little too complicated, too rich for my blood. I don't like it.
Okay, good enough. Our last email comes in from Michael, who writes, "Time to rev up the Ben Simmons trade rumors. There is an obvious one that hasn't been mentioned. Ben Simmons for Gordon Hayward. Simmons is 6 years younger and fits into the Hornets' timeline, and Hayward fits into the Sixers' title aspirations. Who says no?" Quickly, before you answer this, Rohan, I mentioned this possibility multiple times on the show before the season began in a slightly different iteration where I had Miles Bridges going to Philadelphia with Hayward, and obviously that isn't happening now. So I want to thank Michael for bringing it up, and what are your thoughts on it?
I like this one. It's interesting. I think Philly would want to get one more piece, squeeze the Hornets for one more piece there. But
yes,
I like that
trade. They
definitely
would.
I like that trade.
I think that because of the age difference alone, Charlotte has to give up a first or maybe like Jalen McDaniels. I don't know. But it's not a straight up swap situation.
But that's an interesting one.
So it is interesting. So that does it for today's show. Thank you so much to you, Rohan. Thank you so much to our listeners for sending in.
Except Chris.
All these wonderful emails, especially Chris. Everyone, please keep them coming in to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everybody, please stay safe. Everybody, please continue to enjoy the NBA season.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.